You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Welcome to another episode of Marketing News Canada. I'm thrilled to introduce you to Brent Chaters, who is the managing director in Accenture Interactive and leads their marketing activation team in Canada. Brent is responsible for expanding and creating world-class customer experiences for their clients across marketing, customer retention, and customer acquisition. Brent, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Darian.
So I've seen Accenture, and I'm sure many of our listeners have, sponsor a lot of events. We've seen the logo everywhere. But how would you, in kind of a nutshell elevator speech, explain Accenture to kind of everyday people who are hanging out on an elevator?
Oh, man, like where to start? Like Accenture is this company of, you know, I think we're coming up to 700,000 people globally. Which, you know, that in and of itself tells you that we're involved in a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I had to do an elevator pitch, I could probably talk about my specific space, but you know, we have, what's nice about it is that, you know, we cut across all industries. You know, we cut across a lot of different services. So, you know, in my space, you know, my goal is to really partner with the CMOs of Fortune 500s and help them drive their transformation. You know, figure out, you know, what does modern marketing look like, how to evolve it, and where to next. And that could be everything from, you know, designing your organization through to getting the right technology to the experience.
That's amazing. So many of the CMOs that have been on this show, I'm sure you've worked with, and many CMOs that are listening might want to work with you. And so maybe give me experience of maybe someone you've worked with and what it looked like, or those that are interested in working with you. How does that work? How do they bring Accenture to their business?
Yeah, I mean, we usually have pre-existing relationships with a lot of our clients. And, you know, usually when they start to engage with us, there's a problem statement, right? And they don't always have, you know, a clear, what do we need to get to? So sometimes we'll work with them on how to refine it. But it could be, you know, I hear this metaverse thing is a big deal. What and how should I think about marketing and its role? You know, very, very broad statement. Well, what does metaverse mean to you? How do you think your customers will engage with it? Where do you want to take it? You know, we start to work through those questions, and then ultimately it comes down to here's where we think you need to start, which is there a pilot that you should begin with? Or is there a business case even that you need to think about? Or is there an experience that you want to define around it? You know, and then we also try and stretch that thinking to not just be about marketing, but where does this sit within customer care? You know, how does this start to feed into hand off to your sales teams? How do your employee experiences internally change as well, right? So like the idea is to be as mindful as possible about kind of all aspects across, you know, what they're trying to do. And then, you know, as we engage, we usually have an executive sponsor. It could be a CMO. It could be a senior director or a VP, depending on what it is. And often cases, we will pull together three or four VPs or SVPs across a large program and look at how that comes. Because, like, real transformation doesn't come from one person. It usually comes from multiple teams coming together. And then, you know, we'll either provide the right thought leadership or the right people who can be hands at keyboard to execute and do the work.
That's awesome. I love that, hands on keyboard. It's beautiful. Okay, so Accenture, all around the world. You got offices in all sorts of countries. What does it mean specifically to be Canadian, though? And maybe what have you noticed, or what do people say about maybe you and your office when you're like, oh yeah, we're in the Canadian office, and what maybe kind of unique perspective do we bring to that marketing sphere?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think this is Accenture. I think this is kind of how Canadians as marketers operate. You know, often we have to wear multiple hats. You know, we're known for, you know, getting things done. I think, you know, when you look at the skills within a Canadian marketer, they tend to be more well-rounded as a whole. It's just, you know, our business requires us to understand a variety of aspects. Whereas if you start to look, you know, outside of Canada, people go very, very deeply into, you know, media, into marcom, into, you know, core advertising. Like, whereas here, it's kind of like, you know, one day you'll wake up, I'm wearing this hat. The next day, I'm going to wear a different hat. So, you know, I think as a whole, you know, that is one thing that makes us different. For myself personally, I also come from a B2B and a B2C background. So I bring, you know, both of those things together, a heavy focus on analytics and a heavy focus on thinking about your audience. You know, I think B2B marketers have to be much more mindful in terms of targeting and who their audiences are, just because the segment tends to be smaller and you want to make your dollars work, you know, more efficiently. And I think Canadians tend to be more focused on performance and outcome as a whole, which means, you know, we tend to stray away from, you know, bigger media generally. You know, you don't see as much discussion around TV and mass. It's more focused on where is their performance and how do I drive outcome? And if there is mass in it, how is that driving back to an action or an activation as a whole?
That's pretty cool. Do you get the chance to work with the other offices around the world on occasion to connect?
We do. I was in New York a couple weeks ago, meeting with a variety of counterparts. We actually had a global team come together, which is always exciting. You know, some of our clients obviously also have global footprints as well. So I have teams that work across Canada, India, New York, Japan, Australia, and, you know, that just across that one client, they all kind of come together in various ways to service those needs. You know, and I think that what that gives us as well is access to a broader set of talent. But also, you know, brands are going international. Even if they're not physically located internationally, they require that international presence. So, you know, if you want to figure out how do you break into the APAC region, you're going to need different SMAs or advisors in terms of what's required for the various countries that make up that APAC geography.
That's awesome. What a neat role and job you get to play. Now, those that are listening maybe are students, or maybe they're in marketing at the moment and I'm wondering, how do I have the job that Brent has, right? And I'll often meet students, maybe they're third or fourth year, they're just graduating, and they'll often say, I want to go into strategy. And I'm like, I don't often think you can go from graduating to strategy. Usually it's more like implementation and, you know, cut your teeth in a few areas. But what was it like for you to get to where you are today doing what a lot of people would dream of doing?
Yeah, I mean, I feel so fortunate for what I get to do, right? Like, I believe if you don't wake up and you don't love what you do, mm-hmm. you're not doing the right thing. And every morning I get up and I love what I do. So I've always felt very blessed for that. You know, and as you talk about students, I believe it's important for us to give back to those communities. And, you know, we actually do a lot with universities and colleges. We're also looking at creating, you know, job opportunity for those who haven't had the opportunity to go to a university or college. We call it our apprenticeship program. You know, and effectively, you know, how do you get into it? You know, very simply, you apply to Accenture, and we have what's called, you know, as I mentioned, either our apprenticeship program, which is you don't have any classical training at all, you haven't gone to university, and we will work with you to build those skills and, you know, effectively put you through training. I think Accenture spends $1 billion a year on training and education for people. So, you know, it's big for us to foster and develop our talent. And then, you know, you've also got what we call our interactive development program. So that's for people who have gone through and graduated university or college, and they're coming in with a slightly more mature set of skills. And, you know, it's designed to, I call it the all-you-can-eat buffet. Effectively, you try a little bit of everything in terms of what we do and figure out what you do or don't like. If you know, you want to try copywriting today, paid media tomorrow, and the next day, you know, how to implement a CMS, the world's kind of your oyster, and you kind of, you know, you've got 2 years to figure out what you want to do. You lock in, and then that becomes your career track over time. So, you know, it's a very mindful approach to creating both access to skills and developing that talent. And I would say, you know, you probably do get into strategy very early on. Like, we want you to be thinking about how this is going to have an impact to clients. One of the first things I love to see is, can you build a business case? You know, think about the impact of what your work is going to do and the outcome that's going to have for the client And that is good work to do.
That's awesome. And tell me about mastering search analytics, measuring SEO, SEM, and site search available on Amazon.
I mean, a little bit dated, but published through O'Reilly, mastering search analytics, effectively, you know, it's the intersection of what I love about search is people put into intent, their intent into a search engine, right? They're like, I'm looking for someone, trying to answer a question. And sometimes it's, you know, what's the name of the actor in that movie, to how do I do whatever, to, you know, if you're like thinking of getting a mortgage, what's the best bank rate I could get? You know, all kinds of sorts of things. And what I found interesting about that is it gives you such an insight to both quantitative and qualitative data elements to understand both, you know, what are people looking for? Where is their mass, and kind of how does that connect over a series of searches as well? And I think, you know, you've got the big players, you know, Google and Bing, but then you've also got site search. And I don't think, you know, organizations think often enough about how do you mine that data to understand what your consumers are trying to find. And, you know, I always love to think of, like, you know, your metrics on two quadrants. One, you know, was it a great experience? And two, was it a successful outcome?
Yeah.
So, you know, high success outcome and great experience, top right quadrant, that's where you want to land. If you're not nailing either of those two things, you're probably not creating a great experience. And site search allows you to understand where and what people are doing. And if they're abandoning, you're probably missing something. But at least you've got the data to understand how do you improve your site.
Yeah.
You know, what do you need to do about it and evolve it?
Awesome. And I want to give a shout out. Speaking of education, you have your chartered marketer brought to us by the CMA. Tell us about what that is and what it means to you.
Yeah. So I'm fortunate enough to sit on the board for the CMA. And I lead our chartered marketer group. So, you know, what effectively we're looking to do is to continue to further credentialize what a marketer, you know, really means. And the idea of creating a chartered marketer is, you know, somebody once said this, where, you know, anybody from some part of the organization shows up and says, I can do marketing. You know, some guy from finance shows up and is like, I got this, I can do marketing. It's like, well, one, what you're thinking of marketing is advertising. Marketing is actually a profession, and there is a variety of skills that sit in there. And by getting your chartered marketer, you're effectively saying, one, I have the experience, I have the exposure to a core set of skills. This is what it looks like, and there's a high level of credential to it. The second thing is ethicalness, right? So from the CMA, we firmly believe that just because you could do something doesn't mean you shouldn't. You need to think about the ethicalness of marketing. And so part of that chartered, marketing accreditation is to also show that you're really driving that ethical approach to marketing as well.
That's awesome. And Amber Mack has been on the show before, and you've co-hosted a show with her, Marketing Disrupted, which is in the, they're still relevant today. And so tell us about this show and what people could find.
Yeah, so Amber and I did season one just before the pandemic. I think it was right when the Raptors won the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because we had the kickoff right when they were having that. I remember the parade going down the street, and it was just chaos in the city of Toronto that day. And, the idea was, you know, two things. One, let's create a great platform for Canadian marketers to be able to get international exposure. And then two, let's mix them in with international thought leaders so that it creates this draw of bringing both together. I think, you know, in Canada, we're very humble, as a whole. You know, we're often known as, you know, Canadians being polite and all that, and that's great. But I also think, you know, we need to start to rise up on our platforms and say, look at what we're doing, look at how we're thinking about things. And the idea was, you know, like, let's take some of our best and brightest in Canada and create that platform to start to elevate their voice. I think we reached across 62 countries through that. We've had great listenership. And Amber and I have continued to kick around, you know, what would a season two look like? And, you know, we're always trying to think of, like, what are the big topics that are important to consider, and you know, how do you want to start to show up? So, you know, I mean, a lot of what we talk about through that podcast, I think is still relevant today, given that lens.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, question I need to ask, you mentioned this. Do we have a Prof G of Canada? Is there a marketing professor that is loud, maybe not loud, but like very opinionated, has ideas, and that people follow and maybe has authored a book or maybe has a podcast?
That's a great question. I mean, I haven't seen anyone that I feel has really hit that international plateau yet. I think that one of the best marketers out there right now, and probably not a marketer, but like copywriter, I think Ryan Reynolds is doing a ton of great stuff. Like, he finds ways to be very timely about what's happening. He finds a way to capture that moment. And creates great copy around it and a great voice and message. I think he's not out there saying, hey, look at what Canadians are doing, but I think he is doing a lot of good both within the confines of Canada that, you know, a lot of people probably don't know about. I think he's leveraging the privilege and opportunity that he's had to create opportunity for those who haven't. So, you know, I have a ton of respect there. I think one of the things within the CMA we are trying to do is create that voice as well. And there is a big discussion about how do we start to create that voice also. But I think that there's still a ton of open space for marketers to continue to be more on the international stage.
No, 100%. And speaking of that, and mentioning Ryan and Blake, his wife's amazing work, you know, kind of behind the scenes, even quiet, but probably most people don't even know about it because it got a few blips in the Canadian press. But their investment in an amazing Indigenous mentorship program right here in Canada. For you as a center, what does it look like as you wrestle and say, how do we get more diverse voices, diverse talent into the world of a center and other marketing organizations?
I mean Accenture has been focused on diversity for a long time, like before I hate to say this, but like before it was trendy.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the last couple of years diversity has become a topic. It's embarrassing that it's taking kind of, you know, the collective world that long to figure it out. But one of the things that lured me into Accenture was that there was this push for inclusion. When we talk about diversity, we're actually talking about inclusion first and then diversity second, because it's about creating opportunity for others, and intersectionality is such an important thing. Like, you can't just say, well, somebody is one, you know, one race, one gender, one whatever. Like, you're kind of made up of a variety of pieces, and Accenture really does try and look and understand that. And, you know, where I've been fortunate enough is that it's also given me an opportunity to kind of create platforms to drive more inclusion diversity. So it's not just what Accenture is doing, but also, you know, we're creating a network of partners that we are working with to look at how we can drive better inclusion diversity in the community. We're looking at leveraging other partnerships within, you know, I myself come from an Indigenous background, so I'm also the ERG sponsor for that. But we're looking at how we create opportunity for Indigenous. We're doing the same thing through our Black ERG. We're doing the same thing through our Asian ERG. We also have a men's and a women's ERG. So, you know, we have an LGBTQ ERG. And, you know, in each of those, we often partner together and we think about, like, how do we reach out and extend not just what Accenture is doing internally, but through our client base and our partners and the relationships that we have to, you know, just for me, the aspiration is, how do I make this just a better world for my children to inherit?
That's amazing. And for you, kind of when you're watching kind of from your perspective, you get this great vantage point of being with CMA, being with Accenture, kind of being in the trenches with clients and coming back out and working on their strategy. What are you excited for this next season? What kind of trend are you seeing, or what sort of kind of, like, maybe it's new tech or something that you're just excites you about, kind of what movements you're seeing around the world?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's two things. One, and it's an unfortunate one, but I think burnout is a very real thing. You know, the pandemic has been hard, especially on marketers. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that we're actually seeing as a trend is that there's a higher level of attrition within marketing compared to other parts of the business. And, you know, part of what's driving that is this heavy shift towards digital has ratcheted up the speed and pace at which marketing has had to operate at and has really become the gateway to clients. It's also put, you know, a second level of pressure to drive numbers and revenue for their business as well. There's been a heavy reskilling. And then, you know, add on top of that, you know, you've got kids who are working from home. You're trying to balance a family. You're trying to balance everything else. Work doesn't really leave because it's always there. You literally just turn on your computer and, you know, it's never there. So it's easy to be like, well, I would be commuting right now, so I'll work till 7. I'll flip open my laptop on the weekend. So burnout is a very real thing. And I think, you know, as the world is starting to open up again, I'm hopeful that, you know, people's well-being, their mental health is something that is top of mind for a lot of leaders. I know it's certainly something that I and our leadership team continue to look at. So, you know, that is a big thing. And then, you know, outside of that, you know, we talked about the metaverse. I actually think if you decouple what metaverse is, it's not just about VR, it's about the intersection of blockchain, AI, different channels and the intersection of the physical and digital world. You know, all of those elements are certainly hot. You know, blockchain has been hot for quite a while. I think you continue to see organizations that are focused on purpose a lot more as well. I think customers have gotten a lot more savvy, and it's not just good enough to be like, this is my bank, or this is my telco, or this is my grocery store, but, you know, how are they showing up in a purpose-built world? So a lot of organizations have to think about how purpose and brand and experience start to intersect, which means that marketing, you know, we were talking about marketing is not just advertising. Marketing means now if you're at the grocery checkout, how are you showing up and making sure that consumers understand, you know, we're working to a green policy, mm-hmm. and this is what it means. And, you know, educating them at point of sale, or, you know, trying to reduce carbon footprint by reducing the amount of packaging that happens, you know, and helping driving consumers. And then also thinking about who their partners are in that ecosystem. Marketing starts to play a role in this, which means, you know, as we think about trends, it's also the CMO is no longer just marketing, but a partner across, you know, the CFO, the CIO, the CTO, et cetera, et cetera. And as they partner, they have to be thinking more business oriented and not just, you know, what the brand is, but the outcomes that they're looking to drive. And then there's also a heavy push on automation, you know, how do I allow my marketing organization to do more strategic work and then move things to automation? People worried about AI taking away jobs. AI is not taking away jobs. AI is allowing, you know, organizations to scale, and they're building their talent base to be able to run against that at a significant speed and pace that they wouldn't be able to do if they didn't have it. So there's less risk of a job disappearing, more of a, how do I allow people to do work that is more fulfilling to them?
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
So, serious question, being a parent. Do you feel you have an advantage being a parent about the metaverse because you've observed such things as Roblox, Fortnite, Minecraft?
I feel like my kids are addicted to Roblox.
The OG metaverse, I would say.
Oh, totally.
Let's talk about Second Life. That Dwight entered as yes. himself in an Office episode, which was, again, maybe that's the OG, you know, that's the original of metaverse. But then Roblox took over because Second Life did not work. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, or Pokemon Go, yes. right? Like that was a great, and like that was a phenomenon that came. And
did you get hooked? Like, did you get into it?
I mean, I caught a couple Pokemon in our office for sure.
Yeah, I got way into it. I spent money on that, I will admit. I have no shame in it because I live in Fort Langley and we have this place up the way because they took over an old map of this kind of quest game. And so I live by a historic fort, Fort Langley, which is near a museum, which is near some statues. And so it was these three kind of like, I can't remember what they were called, but the places where you would battle. And so it became this very popular nest area. So anytime I drive up there or walk up there with my kids, there'd be like maybe 20 or 30 people all there catching. It was awesome.
That's so amazing because that to me is the intersection of that digital space and that physical space coming together. And you actually create a community. So, you know, you start going there enough and you start seeing people, you're like, Pokemon? You're like, yeah, Pokemon. And like you start to like bond with people
in real life,
in a real life. Yeah. Like I like, that's the stuff I love. You know, it's, and I think it's gotta be more of that. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, my kids are, you know, younger, so 8 and 4. But like the adoption of technology that they've had over the last 2 years as well has just been insane.
It's wild. But even geocaching. Yeah, have you tried geocaching recently with the new app?
So I was doing geocaching back probably like 8-9 years.
When you needed just, it was a GPS only. Now it's that's amazing.
You know, and you'd leave something for someone else, and they like, and I love that idea of like, you don't know what you're gonna find as a little treasure.
Yeah.
But there's that what you're gonna get, kind of what you're gonna leave.
Yeah.
Right. And that creates that kind of like sense of awe that that you could have. But, you know, I mean, I've always kind of been on that front end of technology. Like when Oculus came out, I got a Quest in the early days. And I remember, you know, getting my wife to try it, and my in-laws were over and everybody put it on and they were playing the Batman game. And like they put it on, they're like, I'm Batman. Like, this is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel like I am in Gotham City,
yeah,
and I am Batman. So, you know, like the immersion, you know, certainly changes.
Yeah.
But I also think, you know, you want to watch out and make sure that we don't lose that, what we were talking about, like that connection in real life as well. Because that's just as important.
Yeah. Like random fact, I sometimes officiate weddings, and I've done many of them. And I officiated a wedding. I remember people who met on World of Warcraft, and they met and they fell in love. And so there's this old tradition where you tie your hands together at a wedding as a symbol of being tied. You know, so it's where tied the knot comes from. And I tied their hands together with a video game controller because that's where they met. And it just meant so much cool. to them.
That is so cool.
Do you remember? Okay. Were you into games as a kid? Do you remember Sega Genesis? And they
You were either a Nintendo family or a Sega family.
Yeah,
we were a Sega family.
So I was a Nintendo family. So we had the gun and the trackpad. But my friend Calvin Cadwallader had the Sega Genesis, and he had a glove. And we went to his house one day, and a glove had just come out, and you could touch things and move around on the screen with this thing. I think the Genesis since no longer exists.
Well, Nintendo. There was that movie, The Wizard, with Fred Savage.
Were they promoted?
And
yeah,
it was. Going to the Nintendo, it was the Nintendo thing, the Nintendo Power Glove.
Yeah.
That was like, it was just an hour and a half commercial for that paraphernalia. But yeah, it was any kind of guy, and you're like, it doesn't quite work the way. But like, you know, again, I think that was a start of like spatial recognition and, you know, kind of how you start to engage in different ways with the medium.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I also think that like, to me, that was a turning point of digital just being, you know, a thing that people engage with, to starting to create a palette that can actually create like an art form.
Yeah.
And I you know, I don't want to get into NFTs. There's a whole thing about NFTs, but like, you know, I'm watching people now in VR space create art that only exists in this digital platform.
Yeah.
You know, Photoshop for the longest time, you know, as a graphic designer, wasn't given that same recognition as somebody who would use a traditional canvas.
Yeah.
Now all that is starting to change, right? Like what is digital art?
Yeah.
You know, has evolved significantly over the last 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, no one's really bought any of my Microsoft Paint things I've done, but, you know, one day maybe. I used to love Microsoft Paint. I fiddle around on it so much.
Just you got to find the right market for it.
Does it exist anymore? Like, can you, like, I have a MacBook, so I'm like, but on a PC, can you get Paint?
Microsoft Paint? I'm certain it's got to be there. It's a classic.
It's a classic.
It's like Minesweeper. Like, Minesweeper still on a PC?
I wonder. That's wild. Brent, favorite marketing book or business book that you recommend to your people you love?
Oh, so I'm not going to answer that with a business book. Because here's the thing. I think when you live and breathe it all day long, you want to find inspiration from outside.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things my daughter really got into through COVID was magic. So she started doing these like online magic lessons.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I'd sit there and try and learn what's going on and then like work with her on the tricks. And she's gotten really good. I should not do any magic, but she has a couple that like will dazzle people. And, you know, as she was getting into it, she started to like look on YouTube and see other magicians. And there's this guy, Nate Staniforth, who fantastic magician. He had this online course that she wanted to try out. And, it's focused on how to produce an illusion. So it's not about learning a trick. It's the thought that goes into illusion. And, as I sat there and watched it, I thought, man, like this like so applies to marketing as well. Cause he talks about things like the funnel of attention. So like in a magic trick, you basically kind of create this funnel and, you know, people are focused on what's happening within that funnel and, you know, the funny stuff, the magic happens outside of that funnel. So you got to figure out like where and how are people focused, and then you draw their attention back out and, you know, the illusion has happened. And what I love about it is he also like, you know, magic's an art form. Like it's not just about like how do you create a trick, but like it's about creating a narrative, a story, and kind of, you know, as I start thinking about like how do all these things intersect, I'm like that's marketing. Like that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to think about, you know, how do people get something done? How do we help influence a decision? How do we create, you know, and connect a story and an art form to it? You know, and so as I listen to Nate's webinar on this, yeah, I was just like, man, there's just like so much that I can learn and apply that I hadn't thought about. So, you know, I encourage people to like think outside of the traditional books. You know, grab some if you want to get deep into it, but like find your inspiration outside. Like that's where innovation comes from, right? Yeah. Instead of like conformity of the same old, same old.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Take an improv class maybe.
Yeah. I mean, one of the girls on my team took an improv class and it was just a great way for her to build her presentation skills.
Yeah.
And it gave her confidence as well, where like you've got a client like, what about this? And she's like, I've done improv. I now know how to like respond to something and deflect and do, you know, all this other stuff. So, you know, like there's a ton of skills that you can build outside that are both fun.
Yeah.
But round you out in different ways.
That's amazing. You ready for a few rapid fires?
Let's do it.
What was your first ever job?
Gas station attendant.
Night owl or early bird?
Night owl. Forced to be an early bird now.
Yeah. Cat or dog person?
Dog.
First thing that you ever marketed?
Probably a garage sale where I was like selling a bunch of G.I. Joe toys.
That's awesome.
In the neighborhood.
Dark or milk chocolate?
I kind of love both.
Both, yeah.
Yeah,
that's great. Favorite word right now?
Favorite word? Fortunate.
Nice. What's the last charity you supported financially or with your time, and why?
There's been a variety of Indigenous ones. You know, partly, as I mentioned, my personal background is Métis. On my mom's side, and we're on a rediscovery. Like I grew up in, you know, as a white kid, I was always encouraged to not talk about my Indigenous heritage. And, So we're kind of going through a rediscovery. Like I met with, my mom passed away, but her sisters were in town a couple weeks ago, and they're also going through a rediscovery. And we talked about how societal worlds have changed. So, you know, it's become a bit of a personal passion for me in the last little bit.
That's awesome. I think, I think we have similar experiences. When my grandpa passed away, I think my family discovered that he had kept this hidden from all of us. And discover the scripts and you know, which is the Métis birth certificates, and it's wild.
It's, yeah, I mean, the more I learned about it, the more it's actually a more common story than one would think. And it makes sense when you start looking into the history and everything that's happened. But you know, I think it's important to acknowledge, you know, kind of all aspects. Like, I don't just consider myself Métis now. It's it's one piece of what makes up my past heritage. It's certainly in my DNA, but I also want to learn about that lost heritage. Yeah.
What's a movie that you just love?
I think anything by Christopher Nolan is usually, you know, like, a lot, like, just could watch. Inception, I thought, was, you know, brilliant.
That's
awesome. You know, I think, what was the one? It was like Hugh Jackman, and Christian Bale. It was like Batman and Wolverine, where they were magicians.
The Prestige. Yes. Nice. Good call.
And I remember, like, the first movie that made an impression on me was Backdraft. It was the first time where, like, the hero died, and I'm like, what? Like, how does this happen? Like, you know, super blockbuster, but totally unexpected in terms of, like, narrative.
Great movies. Favorite song or album on repeat right now?
I'm a bit of a slave to what my kids have. So sometimes it's some Cocomelon stuff. My oldest loves The Weatherman, which is, I think it's going to be like the catchy summer tune. As a whole. But, I'd say those are probably the big ones.
That's awesome. If
it was up to me, it'd be like AC/DC or something.
But, you know, but who's in the car? And I hear you. If you weren't doing this job, what would you be doing with your life?
I think I'd probably still be doing this. If not a teacher, you know, I feel like something that would be given back to the next generation.
That's awesome. App on your phone you can't live without?
I mean, for work, I'm affixed to email. For personal, Reddit. You know, just constant barrage of, like, new and surprising information all the time.
It's awesome. Favorite children's book?
Favorite children's book? My daughters and I have been reading a lot of The Paper Bag Princess right now. My oldest has been reading Bone, which is more of a comic graphic novel.
That's a great one.
We've also been reading Dog Man, has been,
they're great.
Has been, surprisingly, you know, interesting.
You get to flip the pages in terms of, for the motion. Those are always fun. No, that's wild.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's cool. Best thing you ever bought for under $10.
Say I ever bought under $10. That's a tough one. So it wasn't for me. But I would say it was for my mom. It was a lime crushed soda. And it was, you know, it was right, like she probably only had a few days left. And the only thing she wanted was a lime crushed soda. And, like, I remember that. And it was, she could only take a couple sips of it. It was one of her dying wishes she wanted. And, I'll always remember that.
That's really special. Part nostalgia, part, you know?
And whenever I see a lime crushed soda now, I'm always like, I want to, because they're not that popular. Yeah, so when I see it, I'm like, just brings back that memory and I buy one.
That's awesome. Last question. What is the most important thing you ever changed your mind about?
So if you asked my wife, it would be about getting married. I had told her that, you know, I think it's more important to have that commitment, and the ceremony is not as important. and you know, committed is committed. And you know, we talked about it, and you know, what was important was that it was the declaring that commitment publicly. It wasn't about having like a big ceremony, but it was about making that public declaration as a whole. And I think that was important.
Yeah, that's awesome. Brent, thank you for being here today, sharing so much. This is, we talk for hours here on all these topics and go deeper into each of those things, but it was a real thrill to have you and to introduce you to the community here.
Yeah, thanks, Darian, for both having me here, but also for being such an advocate as well, right? When we talk about creating that platform for marketers, I think, you know, you're doing more than your part and very much respect everything you do.
Oh, appreciate it. Thanks for everyone for joining us today. This is Marketing News Canada. Brent Chaters, Accenture. Check them out. Where can people find you online if they want to read more about you or, you know, outside of the podcast, of course, and your book?
Yeah. I'm on LinkedIn, Brent Chaters. Not a lot of us. Should be the only one out there.
Perfect.
Twitter, yep. My handle is Brent Chaters. And then, you know, you'll find me if you do a quick Google search all over any of those things. We'll probably connect.
Your fax number will pop up, your pager number.
Sweet.
Perfect. I want to bring that back. I wonder if I got a fax machine and a number, if anyone would fax me.
Well, of course.
Or a pager.
I would send you a fax.
Would you?
Send you a fax. I would page you to be like, hey, a fax is coming through.
Or do you remember, what was it? Was it Woof? Was it Woof that,
Woof.
Remember the, what's his name? The guy, the Ryan on The Office, he created this technology. He was trying to pitch this technology where you would send one message and it would go to send a fax, send an email, send a phone call, send a text, and it would do it all in one go. He was way ahead of his time.
I feel like you need your ICQ number in there as well.
Yes, ICQ, of course. Oh, I loved ICQ. Brent, thank you again for being here today, and we'll see everyone next time on Marketing News Canada.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded in the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editors Travis Jeffers and The Podfather.